Welcome to the podcast that puts a finger on the pulse of medicine and technology. On this show, you'll hear from investors, industry executives, and healthcare providers on the science and business of medicine. I'm your host, Omar M. Khatib, and this is the State of MedTech.
What is going on, everybody? Great to be here. Happy Friday to everybody. I know everybody was looking for the weekend, but you know, we couldn't end this week without having the great debate. We have two champions, the champions from the surgical and ortho world and a champion from the meme world. Really honored to have them both on. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're across YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and of course, none other than LinkedIn. For everybody who's on LinkedIn, I see you guys joining. Thank you for joining us. I want to see some comments. Drop some comments. Let us know what city you're joining in from. We always want to know what city you're joining in from. Having a lot of people from Australia. I don't know if it's because you guys have been on lockdown and the government's not letting you go anywhere, but either way, we're here to entertain you. So without being said, let me bring on our guests one by one. Our first guest, weighing in at 250 pounds, at a sizable 5'6", he is the medical device world's most famous and infamous meme maker. The one, the only, the legendary, Chad, the Mad Device Rep. Chad, how you doing?
Good to be back, Omar.
Oh, it's always a pleasure.
5'6", you're really trying to protect my identity.
I know, right?
250 pounds.
Hailing from the great city of Springfield, Illinois, right?
That's right. Sounds like I got to start taking care of myself better.
Exactly. Oh, yeah, exactly. There we go. And I see people on the link on LinkedIn sharing those emojis. Love it. If you like what we're doing, hit those emojis. Like, we're doing a lot of work entertaining you guys. Just, you know, hit those emojis up for God's sake. And then my next guest, you know him as Dr. Vinod Dasa. He is an orthopedic surgeon, a big voice on LinkedIn, a LinkedIn top voice, also founder of doc.social. If you don't know about it, go check them out. I don't know what he's coming in on height and weight wise, but definitely a formidable voice. Dr. Dasa, I'm bringing you on. How you doing, Dr. Dasa?
I'm doing well. Thanks, Omar.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. And thanks for carving out some time to come on the show. It's going to be fantastic. So, you know, why don't we do a little quick intro. Dr. Dasa, if for those of our audiences that are just learning about you today, can you give like a quick high level about who you are and where you're calling in from and your background?
Sure. So I'm an orthopedic surgeon. I'm vice chair of orthopedic surgery at LSU in New Orleans. I'm also the director of research in our department. Also work closely with Ochsner Health, which is one of the large health systems here in the Gulf South. My area of focus surgically and clinically is adult reconstruction sports medicine, and even within that, focusing on adult knee. Been in practice. I got recruited to New Orleans post-Katrina back in 2007 and have been here since.
Fantastic. And as you can tell, I'm still trying to get used to these spotlights. So forgive me as I'm shifting around, everybody. And Chad, why don't you do a quick introduction for yourself as well, please?
Most of you all know me as the Mad Device Rep, and more recently known as Chad Device is my LinkedIn persona. I make content for the Red Hat Gang, aka the medical device sales industry, and ultimate goal is to really build a community within the Red Hat Gang, share ideas, advocate for ourselves, and to keep the humor flowing.
Fantastic. Now let me bring you guys both back. And again, I'm going to piss off a lot of people shifting these things, but you know, hey, you know, everybody, this is a low budget, you know, this is a high value, low budget production, you know? So, Medtronic, Stryker, when you guys are ready, we'll accept your sponsorships on the show. And also I'll stop talking crap about you guys. So just joking. I got love for Medtronic and Stryker. It's all good. Just depends on what day it is. So now let's dive into it. And again, for all those who are joining live, Love the LinkedIn numbers. I'm starting to see the YouTube numbers climb. If you want to drop a comment, you know, we're going to be highlighting your comments. So let us know, what city are you joining in from? I want to see that in the comments. So go ahead and drop a comment. What city are you joining in from? So let's start with today's topic. And today's topic, let me bring up the banner. Here we go. Should med reps post awards on LinkedIn? Let's give it a little bit of context. So Dr. Dasa, let me take me and Chad off. If you can give a little bit of context to maybe the post that you saw earlier this week and your thoughts on it. Let's start there.
Yeah, so it's really intriguing. I didn't expect that a comment would touch a nerve like this, but it's really interesting to kind of see how this is playing out. So I don't know, maybe it was a week ago or whenever it was, I saw somebody post their $5 million territory award or something along those lines. And I simply said, you know, and I reshared the post, just like hundreds or thousands of other people do constantly. And I simply commented on it and said, you know, while the business of medicine values these metrics, you know, $5 million territory or what have you, the clinical side of medicine doesn't. And so you've got a group of folks who are aligned and motivated to make money. And make no mistake, healthcare is a business, physicians, hospitals, surgery centers, whatever, right? You can't really do much unless you can pay the bills. And so what I said was, you know, we as physicians, nurses, therapists, whoever, don't necessarily celebrate and get rewarded based on the monetary value of what we create within healthcare professionally. Yet this side of medicine does, or this side of healthcare does. And when you put them together, when you put them side by side, it just didn't seem to mesh very well. And just that simple observation of how this side of healthcare functions and celebrates accomplishments versus this side of healthcare and how it functions and celebrates accomplishments. The juxtaposition of those two side by side just to me was pretty startling. You know, I don't see that on the clinical side, and that was just something I was pointing out, and apparently it created a firestorm of interest and a lot of comments and a lot of upset folks. But, you know, so it's interesting to see kind of what, you know, where the issues are and, you know, why did this rub people the wrong way? I'll be honest with you. I got a lot of messages of people saying dead on, I wish we didn't focus on the money side of this and we focused on other metrics of success aside from, you know, a big check. So it's been interesting to kind of hear different sides of this and leading to this, you know, live event. You know, I mean, obviously it was pretty compelling that, you know, Omar and Chad thought this is worthwhile.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And great to see we have some people starting to comment about where they're coming in from. We got some people from Germany. Fantastic. Love to hear that. Before we get to some of the comments, and again, for those who are watching, for those of you who are new to the show, two rules of engagement. Number one, drop some comments, drop some emojis, drop your questions. We'll highlight them. But rule number two, and I do this with extreme prejudice, if you decide to join the stream and use this as an opportunity to post a link to your company website, I will block you. I just don't care anymore. So I will do that. So I'm fair warning right now. Chad, let's hear... I don't know. I don't want to call it a counterpoint, but let's hear your perspective and then let's dive into the discussion.
Well, Dr. Doss, I really appreciate you sharing your perspective on this. And I think this topic is a very, very important discussion for both the providers and for reps in our industry. And I think that a lot of it has to do with the perception of these posts on LinkedIn and why we're posting it. So I want to make it clear that we call this a debate. This is not necessarily something that I'm trying to win. I think we're just uncovering nuanced perspectives and different perspectives. Since this has been a topic of discussion on my page since I started it, you know, what we should be posting, you know, highlighting some cringeworthy posts. And really quickly, you know, Omar and Dr. Doss, I'd like to run through some poll results from a poll that I conducted yesterday in preparation for this discussion. So the first question...
Did you say poll results?
Poll results.
Man, I love it. It's like we're becoming like CNN. Awesome.
That's right.
All right. Go ahead, Chad.
So we surveyed the following base. Just, I have my own opinions on this, but it's not important right now. What the Red Hat Gang said on the first question, which should we be posting quota achievements on LinkedIn? So we get a number every year, and the expectation for us, for our job security and our performance, is to attain that number. And 48 said yes, and that was 5% of the respondents. 849 said no. The second question I asked, we can go through these in more detail throughout our discussion, and I think this was more specific to Dr. Dawson's post. And
can you repeat that again, Chad? That was 48% yes.
So it was 48 respondents said yes. That was only 5% of the total. So 5% said yes. 849 respondents said no. So that was 95% no. We should not be posting our quota achievements on LinkedIn. The second question was about year-end sales numbers. So if you were given a $5 million quota and you post, you know, I sold 5,200,000, yeah, and it kind of combines it with the quota achievement post, 91% said no. So it was 939 respondents. So even more respondents than the last one. 93 said yes. So that's 9%. So another overwhelming no, we should not be posting our sales numbers to LinkedIn. Then the third that's relevant to this conversation is sales awards. So you see things like President's Club, Rep of the Year, Rookie of the Year, things like that. 604 said no. So that's 62%. 375 respondents said yes, so 38%. So again, just to summarize these three questions, the majority of my follower base who responded to this poll ultimately said, no, we shouldn't be posting about our quotas, our sales numbers, and our sales awards.
Go ahead, Chad.
So I was going to say, what was most interesting about this were the discussions that occurred in my inbox to provide some more color on these numbers. And you're going back to the quota, it's saying, hey, look, quota's our job. That's what we're measured on. That's the cost to entry to be a sales rep. Year-end numbers, another reason, you know, there's a little bit more behind that, especially if certain individuals have an idea of the commission percentages or our competition can look at that and see, okay, this is the kind of business that my competitor's doing in the territory. That was a definitive no as well. And I think the sales awards tie into that, saying, you know what, the sales awards are about us. It's not about our customer. And as LinkedIn has changed more to a way to connect with our customers instead of just our peers, we need to be focusing more on what value we're bringing to our healthcare customer base versus the value we're bringing to ourselves.
And let me add some context as well. So from the provider perspective, right? There are a lot of physicians, believe it or not, that think the rep is free, okay? Because you don't get taught this in medical school. You don't get taught this in residency. You don't get taught this in fellowship. And really, you go into practice, you start doing a bunch of cases. I'm not exposed to this side of medicine, right? And I think a lot of maybe naive physicians, but as you get older, obviously appreciate this, but especially those early in their careers, don't really understand this aspect of healthcare because it's just not important to us. I book a surgery, the implants show up. I don't really care how or what or why or whatever. I just get the job done because my patients are here. Now, if we peel that layer off, obviously there's someone there that's motivated to be there. You're not there as much as we hope out of the goodness of your heart. You've got bills to pay, right? And so what happens then is because there's no context on these platforms, there's no education, there's no nothing, right? There's nowhere for the providers, whether it's a nurse, therapist, physician, hospital administrators, I'm going to guess, understand. The providers that are in the trenches day to day don't really have a way to process what this information is, right? And then in their own world, if I'm a nurse, that's in the ICU, that's getting slammed with COVID and blah, 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 blah. And I see this pop up, I'm going to guess, again, with no context, not understanding what this means or what it represents, right? All of a sudden now, the the questions start popping up, like, how is this person or how is that person achieving this success? And I'm not. Now I'm actually the one taking care of patients. I'm the one taking the risk and I'm the one doing X, Y, and Z, whether that's right or wrong. So again, when this stuff pops up, you have to understand the context in which others are viewing this. And you have to step out from your shoes, put yourself in somebody else's shoes who has zero understanding of how the system works, especially residents, students, young physicians, so on and so forth. And realize that how you see it is very different than how others do.
I think that's a critical perspective that reps need to have, and not only LinkedIn, but in our day-to-day. And this is more of an explanation, not necessarily a defense of some of these posts. I think reps get caught up oftentimes in our day-to-day, especially during the pandemic. Things have gotten difficult for everyone. So I'd imagine that the reps that are hitting, and there's a lot of emotion that comes with the job when you're assigned a certain, what may seem like an unattainable number. And then you're grinding all year, you get to the end, and it's the most exhilarating thing to be able to hit that quota. You're excited, you want to share it. And I think there's sometimes a tendency to lose sight of why we're posting what we're posting and what we're really trying to achieve through that. I think some of that also comes from the idea that I think we're seeing more with newer generations, that we have to build this online brand of who we are as a rep and what our achievements are, and what we're accomplishing, really proving that we are a very marketable candidate in an increasingly more competitive candidate pool. But that also goes back to why we need to be having this discussion. It's a good reminder that look, everybody out there is having a hard time. And if we're celebrating wins, we need to look through our customers' lens first. And we need to, if we're going to share, we need to think about how do we make this more about gratitude and how we've served our customers and what they've done to attain this. Because Wilmar and I talked about this on the last live stream. Like, we're not out there buying our own products. Our customers are the ones that are contributing to these sales numbers and this growth. So if it's going to be posted, personally, not a huge fan. I'm more of a fan of the silent professional concept. But if it does become more important to build our brand or to continue to create content on LinkedIn, then it needs to go through the customer's lens and about the value that's being provided to the patient and the surgeon, and not necessarily our year-end results. That makes sense.
Absolutely. Real quick, guys, let me just hop in just to gotta always show some love to our audience. There's some questions or comments I do want to highlight, and maybe we can use them as talking points. First of all, again, you guys can, I don't know why this audience, they love to do that. Maybe it's because they know it pisses me off that like, don't message me questions. Please just comment in the chat or in the live stream, like normal people. But you know, just a quick shout out. We got Micah coming in from Austin, Colton out of Phoenix, Eric Anderson, great to see you, my friend, out of Florida. Donna Claire out of Chicago. And we have somebody from Germany, Gujulu out of Istanbul. Merhaba Abi Nusselsen, thank you so much for joining. So a couple of so there's a comment earlier I wanted to highlight. So one of the comments comes from, from Fabian, who mentions like, and I think this is about the monetary side of medicine, which is yes, you do, the grants you get, for example. I'm going to give this as a jumping off point. And Dr. Dasa, I want you to comment on this. So yes, that is true. You get money for grants, but I don't remember the last time I saw a physician posting the grant that they got and how much money that their lab got. Like in my entire career being in labs and medicine, I haven't seen that. Dr. Dasa, your thoughts?
Yeah, correct. And if you really want to dissect what goes into a grant, I mean, 40% goes to indirect and direct expenses to the institution. I mean, 60% goes to buying supplies, chemicals and cells and stuff like
that. It's not like money that goes in your bank account.
This is not. I don't know what to make of that, because celebrating a grant is a peer-reviewed process, goes through a significant amount of rigor at NIH or what have you. And you're answering a question that, needs to be answered. You're finding a cure for cancer and you get a $1 million grant from the Cancer Society to go find a cure. I mean, I guess we should keep quiet then. I mean, we shouldn't celebrate that grant. Yeah, it's linked to money, but really there's, so that's my point, right? These sales figures are not linked to, or not, they are, but they're not directly linked to a clinically correlated outcome. And that's the missing point, right? And so you know the grant is in that certain context. You won the grant, a $1 million grant to do this research on cancer. You won that $5 million territory award to do what? Because you made a lot of money, right? It's not patients served. It's not physicians helped. It's not opiates avoided. It's not these things that really then bring in the providers and say, okay, this person really moved the needle for us, right? You got $5 million. You get 5 points on that $5 million or 10 points or whatever it is. There's your trip to Hawaii, you know. So where that's the missing element here, I think.
I agree. You know, and Dr. Dust, to your point, and actually, you know, I'm going to piggyback off this, but just, you know, this is a timely. So this is actually one of my favorite professors from medical school, Dr. Brian Tobin. So he said, you should not live too well based upon the suffering of others. Great quote. Thank you, Dr. Tobin, for joining us. And I think you're absolutely right, Dr. Dossi. Like, again, medical rep life is really, really hard. So it is hard to sell depending on what you're doing and everything, right? But the context is missing. And so for me, I think you look like, again, sorry, everybody, if you have your children around, you should put them away. You look like an asshole if you have no engagement on LinkedIn. You don't amplify your customers, you know, because physicians are posting their clinical cases, their research, everything. You don't engage with that. You don't amplify. And the only time we hear from you is like every 12 months. It's like, oh, look, there's a posting about how much revenue this person might. And out of context, it's like, we don't know for what procedure, how it's helped patients, everything. It's just like, hey, look what I did. And again, it's a hard life, but the other side of it, and reps. And Chad, you tell me, because you know the audience really well. In my opinion, here's something that doctors will not talk about. But let's Dr. Dasa, if I'm wrong, tell me. When you're let's say an implant rep, you're in the room. When you're done with that case, 2-3-4 hour case, you leave the room. You're getting paid that day, versus the rest of the team, which includes the physician, the anesthesiologist, right, who have to take on the liability, the risk, all these things. They don't get paid maybe for net 30, net 60, net 90 days. They don't know if they're going to get paid in full. Meanwhile, you just left the room and get paid, which is fine. But then to add insult to injury, to just kind of push that in front of people on LinkedIn with no context, nothing, just like, hey, look at how much money I'm bringing in. And to Dr. Doss's point, you're not educated about these things as a resident. It just comes off the wrong way. Gentlemen, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that's a fair consideration. And I just summarizing what Dr. Dasa was saying, when you look at it from the physician side, the physicians are not measured quantitatively with income or total revenue brought in. We have to remember that. And I know that most companies have a mission statement that is something along the lines of improving healthcare for healthcare providers around the world. And usually it's some kind of variation of that. And if that's the company goal, that's ultimately the rep's goal. We're there first to serve the patient.
I agree. Dr. Dasa, thoughts?
Yeah, and I posted about this, right? I mean, like Chad said, your mission statement is something along the lines of, we're here to help patients and heal the world and all that. It's not, the mission statement doesn't say we're here to make as much money as we can. But we know the reality of it, right? But if you're going to live to that mission, then how are these accolades aligned with that? And so, you know, there was an interesting person that had commented on a post recently, maybe it was even today, you know, and I chimed in and I said, wouldn't it be interesting where, you know, let's say the value of the rep is how many cases they avoided to get canceled, or how many times did they save my butt or whatever. Right. Imagine if you had a sales meeting, national sales meeting, where you invite OR directors from all around the country, from some of your lead accounts, And they're the ones that handed the awards to the reps for the best clinical service.
That's a great idea. I personally love that idea because again, it's, and again, I'm probably like, I don't care at this point. I'm going to lose followers probably because of this and people will unsubscribe. Here's the other thing is that again, on one side, like the world I come from is surgical robotics, where it is really hard to sell a surgical robot to a hospital. On the other side, some of these reps who might hit quota, they didn't do anything special aside from just showing up. A lot of that is pretty much their surgeons driving the case numbers and volume. So it's like, it's not like they willed that to happen. I think that's a great idea, Dr. Dasa. Chad, what do you think?
I think it's great because it reminds us of our ultimate purpose. And I would love if I showed up to a sales meeting, and especially if it was a surprise, something that the leadership had done, surveying different hospital leaders across the territory to see which reps are truly, through their eyes, bringing the most value and also why. Because we talk a lot about best practices on how to move product, how to engage customers. But what about the best practice of truly being recognized by the customer as delivering mm-hmm. value? Because I mean, let's be honest. We've been seeing that same 2014 LinkedIn article about have reps overstayed their welcome in the OR posted over and over again. But it is an indicator that there are systems that are looking at this as a way to cut cost. And I think it's more important now than ever that we protect and justify our role and presence in the operating room, in the hospitals. And to me, the way that we do that is by continuing to focus on what we're doing for the customer. And that's where I actually do want to ask Dr. Dasa, you know, what you see as the value that the rep brings to your surgeries.
So, you know, again, I've got a very unique perspective on this in context where I see the rep as turning into a coach and a consultant, not so much someone that brings in a bunch of totes and, you know, goes to Central Sterile and helps the process and all that. I'll tell you, the reps I work with, I mean, the knowledge, expertise, and experience that they've get. Remember, reps are extremely unique because they are one of the few knowledgeable stakeholders that actually transition from surgeon to surgeon, hospital to hospital. They have a unique perspective and actually understand best practices and conversely worst practices better than anyone, right? And every rep, if I ask a rep, how am I doing? Every rep's going to tell me I'm the best surgeon in the world, right?
Yeah, yeah, without a doubt, yeah.
But you know, but that brings no value, right? Right. You should actually be telling me, Dr. Dasa, this is where you need to improve, right? But we're scared. You don't want to hurt my ego and all that stuff. But think about that for a minute. This is the only group that truly understands operational processes and workflows, behaviors. They're the only ones that understand all the different personalities. They're the only ones, if you're successful, understand how to talk to a surgeon plus an administrator versus the OR. They know how to navigate all of that. If there's one singular person that could actually probably help solve a lot of the problems in an operating room, it's probably a knowledgeable, highly experienced rep. Because they say, oh, over there, SPD does it this way. You guys should maybe consider doing it here. Dr. Dasa, I saw this surgeon over there use this retractor and it helped with that exposure. Why don't you consider doing that? Or, you know, on and on and on and on, right? But all of that knowledge experience gets tucked away and it gets and hidden. And so then that value doesn't get extracted, right? And then everyone just views them as just wanting to put stickers on an invoice sheet. I think there's a huge, huge opportunity here for the Salesforce to redefine themselves and understand in this new paradigm as we switch to risk-based surgery, right? So if I'm going to now accept more and more risk, who's going to help me mitigate that risk? I'm in the OR all day. I'm not hanging out in other ORs understanding how people are doing things, right? So if I'm going to accept more risk, so let's take this example. Let's say I've got a 5% infection rate, okay? That's crazy high for a total joint surgeon. So my hospital now wants to accept more risk. We're in bundles, we're this, we're all that stuff, right? Now I'm getting measured. All I know is what I know as a surgeon. All I know is this is how I do my surgery. This is how I give my antibiotics. This is how I do everything. Who's going to help me lower that infection rate, right? I mean, the infection nurse in the hospital, they can help, but they're not going to help my surgical tech. And so that rep, those sales folks, they know what other people are doing. They know how the 1% infection rate person does their thing. And if they don't know, they can go help me find out, right? That's what I'm talking about. That's where you actually bring this value that's kind of hidden and untapped. And so, you know, another example is, you know, as we move down this value-based world, length of stay is an easy measure of quality, right? Length of stay is, you know, if your surgeon has a length of, okay, let's back up. If we all agree length of stay for total joint replacements is one of the singular metrics of how we're going to be measured, I challenge every rep listening here to tell me what the length of stay is for their physician that covers hips and knees. Mm-hmm. I bet you there's probably less than 5% of the reps listening right now off the top tip of their finger can tell you what the length of stay is for their physician.
I would say it's probably even less than 1% even. You're absolutely right. No, you're absolutely right.
I'll be honest, I can't.
Yeah. And you know, something I want to bring up, there's a couple of really good comments. Again, we have more people joining. Thank you. If you just joined, we do want to hear what city you're joining from. So please share. We have Michael Walker. We have Colton Rahav. So let me find, oh, dang it. Where did it go? I'll find the comment, but no, I think you're absolutely right. And again, you know, my father, who was a general surgeon for many years, he said it himself. He's like, you know, we rely on the reps to tell us about like the latest techniques and what to do well and everything. And, you know, I think Dr. Das is like and this is an excuse. I really believe it is one excuse I've heard from reps when I talk about this concept that you and I, we share this vision of the reps being a trusted advisor and consultant to the surgeon. As they say, well, like the surgeon doesn't want my opinion and everything. And I think that's kind of a cop out. I think that, you know, the surgeon doesn't want your opinion because you haven't said anything of value to listen to. Usually it's just a bunch of, you know, garbage. But if you show up and you treat the surgery the way a offensive coordinator treats like a football game, right? You know, of course we're talking orthopedics and stuff, so I'm going to use a sports reference. but you know, showing up like, you know, a rep can do this. And I used to do this when I was in surgical robotics. You don't have to wait for marketing. You can go to different cases, take an Excel spreadsheet and record certain like things like setup time, so on and so forth, and go to a surgeon and say, hey, look, I've been in like 50 cases this month. Here's the data that I recorded. We can shave off 15 minutes from the whole case totally if we do these steps in this order. I think if any surgeon, even the toughest surgeon to work with will say, yeah, that's interesting, because you know what's the difference? And Dr. Dasa, back me up on this. It's not your opinion anymore. It's I made an observation. I collected some data. Here's what the data is saying. This is why we should try it.
Right. You know, the fact that you're nervous to bring it up with me, right, tells me that you don't have the confidence, or maybe you don't have a handle of the information. So there's something you need to back up to, because I'll tell you, the reps I work with here locally, I mean, if I'm in the middle of a tough case and they say, why don't you try this? Listen, I'm going to try it, right? Because I value their opinion. They've seen these, and maybe there's an experience that they remember that they can share with me. So, you know, and there are reps that I work with that have probably forgotten more than I'll ever know, because I don't get exposed to the breadth of healthcare that they do. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, when you post these awards at $5 million territory and all this stuff, it's not delivering the value that you can potentially bring.
Absolutely. And it's kind of, again, I'll put it this way. If you want to celebrate that you won this award, this President's Club, okay, fine. If that's the only thing you post about, that has literally now become your brand. Versus if you spent the whole year where every week you're amplifying a physician's clinical case, celebrating their clinical work, celebrating them as great physicians, and not just them, the OR team, et cetera. And then amongst all this value creation, celebrating the team, celebrating the quality care delivered, you say, hey, I made President's Club. This is how many patients we helped, et cetera. And then, oh, by the way, this is revenue. That's a different story versus nothing is done all year round. And it's just like the only time you're going to hear from me is when I'm beating my chest and announcing to everybody how much revenue I brought in. Controversial topic I want to bring up. So Simon Evans, Simon, thanks for joining us. So Simon mentioned that he does do this about recording the data and sharing with the surgeon. he brings up something that I personally believe needs to change. And I'm going to read the comment. I'm going to put it into context. The comment that he says is that, you know, this is a very interesting discussion. In Europe, the pay for reps is much lower than the US. Companies pay a salary and a lower commission, so it's more on serving the patient than growing the top line. Now, Simon Evans, thank you so much for joining the show. Here's the point that I want to make. And Chad, I wonder what you think about this. I personally think that where it's appropriate, the high commission structure needs to be moved away from, and salespeople should be given a higher salary base with a bonus structure when the team hits the goals. Because one of the things that I've struggled with, again, as you both know, I've launched a sales course to help salespeople learn how to sell and market to physicians digitally. The one thing I always hear from a sales rep is like, well, if I do this, et cetera, it might help someone else in another geography. I'm like, oh, like a competitor? Like, no, like somebody else who works on at my company, but it might help their geography. I'm like, why is that a bad thing? And so it's even within companies, sales reps are like, screw everybody else. It's all about me getting mine. If I hit quota, that's all I care about. Right.
And that's a short-sighted mindset, because the longevity of a company is dependent on more than just individual reps staying in their lane. There needs to be a broader understanding of what the big picture looks like. And what I was actually going to comment on earlier to Dr. Doss's points and the points that you brought up, Omar, is that reps also need to see themselves as extensions of their marketing teams. Now, I don't mean building brochures and segmenting and targeting and doing all that fun stuff that marketing gets in the weeds, but I mean that the representation of your brand, and also, just like Omar, you were talking about, that data collection, bringing in perspective from what's going on across the country to your surgeon, is a perfect way to add that value. Just like Dr. Dawson was summarizing that, hey, if you've got a rep coming in saying, I see this across 50 different ORs, now you're bringing value, you're bringing new perspective of things that have worked and bringing suggestions, something that you may not have thought of. So on the point of rep salaries and commissions, I think that we have to be careful with that. There are maybe certain segments of the market where reps maybe are making too much to the point where they're being incentivized just to drive top line growth and maybe engage in some practices that might blur across the ethical lines. But at the same time, I think that if we go too far the opposite direction, we'll be honest, this is a very difficult role in the sales space. Now, being a sales rep, it's a tricky job.
And it's physically very demanding too. I mean, like, Chad, you and I talked about this, that I don't know how, but like for the salespeople who are listening, who are clinical sales reps, and they're, you know, I don't want to say age wise, but like, you know, they're not 20, 30 years old. They have families, everything, being on the road, going hospital, like it is a very rough and demanding job. And I agree. I don't think it should go in the other direction, but something has to kind of sort of normalize it.
Right. You know? And I don't disagree with that. There was a rep I was talking to at some point last year, you know, a friendly rep from a different company that talked about that structure. It was a smaller company, and his role, even though I think his title was more of like business development, more of a consultative title. Another point that I agree with for Dr. Doss is maybe not calling ourselves sales reps, but being consultants. Don't want to go too far down that tangent. But they were incentivized just to keep the business going, bring in new customers, but also do things for the right reasons. So I think that could be an entire focus of a live stream, the pay structure of sales reps and the different nuances behind that.
What would be an interesting exercise is if you did a survey of all the, so let's pick an implant, let's say it's $4,000 and the rep gets 5%, 10%, whatever it is. For that chunk of money, who gets what, right? So what is the perspective? What does that money represent? What's the rep supposed, what are they supposed to be doing from the rep's perspective? If I pay you $500, what do you think you should be doing for that $500? Ask the surgeon, rep makes $500 on this case. What do you think that rep should be doing for this case? Ask the OR director, for this $500, what do you think the rep and distributor should be doing for this case? I'm willing to bet, and even amongst the reps, amongst the surgeons, amongst OR directors, you're going to get multiple different answers.
Sure. Are you talking about as far as what that rep's roles and responsibilities
exactly,
should be?
Right? Is it just bringing totes? Yeah. Is it bringing laser pointer? Is it bringing, so, you know, I don't think we even know what the job description is. You know, I'm sure there's an official one at the company, but sure. In the trenches, what is the role and responsibility? Where do you fit? And especially as healthcare evolves.
That would be an excellent survey.
I agree. You know, and again, like, you know, so for context for me, I carried the bag when I was at Mazor Robotics. It was a surgical robotic company. And what they made very clear to all the sales reps, which is you need to provide so much value to the hospital and every person there that when you walk into the hospital, everybody knows your name and you're not just a sales rep. It's like, oh, that's our, you know, that's one of our account executives for our robotics program. So that included working with the hospital team on the marketing side, working with the OR team with efficiencies, even going to SPD. I mean, I used to carry trays and wash them myself just to be like seen as a valued member as part of the team and not just showing up, doing my thing and leaving. You know, I think the optics on these things are also super important. And to your point, Dr. Dasa, if you're a salesperson and you're in the OR, but the OR director, the staff, like aside from just showing up and bringing your technology, no one really knows what else you do. I think that's on the rep to manage those optics.
Yeah, but I think everyone's got to be on a consistent playing field. The scrub techs think one thing, I think a thing. So I think they're delivering what they need to deliver, but yet my scrub tech doesn't, right? Or the OR director does. So we're all on different pages.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
And the rep thing, you know, so there's no consistency. And I've seen reps, you know, from different companies, and one rep does this and one rep doesn't do that. And, you know, I'm not in the weeds. So this whole space is just really messy, and no one really has a handle on it. And I think that's part of the challenge here is, you know, the sales figures and all these kinds of things represent such a muddy water that it's hard for anyone to kind of figure out what does that mean?
I think it's kind of hard too. Like when you post something that is solely based on a quantitative sales achievement, to really for everyone to understand everything that went into that, you could be the best rep in the entire world and every customer could love you, but that's not the only people who have visibility to your post.
Absolutely. And I want to bring up a couple really interesting comments. One is from Brianna Heitzman, who says maybe instead of focusing on the money aspect, it should be broken down into the number of patients who received a device that changed their quality of life for better. That I completely agree. And again, going back to Dr. Dasa's point, like, these things have to be put into context, right? The other thing I want to bring up, Chad, you brought this up earlier, and it's a very important topic for me. Scott Nelson, Scott, thanks for joining the show. He said 100% sales and marketing either aligned or fundamentally broken, no in between. So one
Spot
thing
on,
I,
Scott.
Yeah, one thing that I want to say, and I hit hard on marketing all the time. In the world of medical devices, when you say marketing, it's really looked at as product management. Commercial marketing is like an afterthought. I don't care what everybody says, but it's true. And the way commercial marketing, AKA, how do we help the sales team sell, is looked at as let's go to a conference and just capture leads of whoever walks by the booth, right? Or let's put on a webinar and that is it. And what marketing needs to realize is that your number one, not just in med device, every industry, your number one resource is a sales team. That's also your most expensive resource, which means as a marketer, what you need to think about is when we do something, number one, how is this helping a salesperson? Forget about selling. How is this helping a salesperson mold a market, deliver the education so that the surgeon can make a better decision and adopt new technology, and of course, shorten pipeline and everything. Once you do that, you have alignment. Sales and marketing, while they're two different teams, they're really the same. And if you don't have alignment there, then you have, you know, a lot of companies where the sales team says, you know, calls the shots and they just tell marketing what to do. And there's other places where marketing's calling the shots, they've never sold and they constantly insult sales. So when marketing does a lousy job at anything, webinars, conferences, a dinner, what's, you know, it's like the Glengarry Glen Rosses. They're like, hey, marketing, the leads are shit. No, you're shit. You know, and that's... Right. I can't. I've been in like two different or three different organizations where I've seen this exact same scenario play out.
Well, and I've got a question too for Dr. Dasa. So when I think about marketing, sometimes you get folks with sales experience, sometimes you don't. They're truly professional marketers and either side is fine, but they've got to spend time in the field. So Dr. Dasa, have you ever been engaged, you know, in the operating room by a marketing representative from any of the companies that provide your products?
Okay. So let's back up a little bit.
Sure.
Go to the average surgeon and ask them if they even know what the difference between sales and marketing is.
Oh, okay. That's a great point.
That's a great point.
Yeah.
This is all one big blob to me.
Yeah.
I see a brochure. You're from the company. It's all one big thing, right?
Yeah.
You guys are getting into the weeds because you live this day in and day out. I missed the class in medical school where they told me the hierarchy of, you know, Fortune 500 companies.
Sure.
I was absent that day.
The amazing if that even existed.
Right. And so go to one of my chief residents right now and ask them what supply chain is. They're not even going to tell you, right? Go to, you guys get, so again, it's context. Put yourself in our shoes, right? If I ask you the Krebs cycle, half your audience will probably have a seizure, right? So it goes both ways. And so, you know, when you guys start talking about this stuff, you have to look at it from our perspective. And none of this has any meaning to the average practical physician. Now, back to your original question. Every once in a while, there will be someone from marketing that comes into the OR, but it's very few and far between and rare. It's the clinical context that a lot of the folks in the at corporate is missing. And I see this, you know, the folks in the field are banging their head against the wall because corporate doesn't get it. And corporate's banging their head against the wall because the field doesn't get it. And it just, you know, back and forth. Yeah. That's a challenge. And it's the same thing in medicine too. You know, if, you know, I have a, for example, and I'll give you an analogous situation, physical therapists, I do surgery. My total knee goes to physical therapy and therapy's wondering why they're swollen and painful. And well, obviously they had knee replacement, but they don't get it. Right. So what we've done now is we have physical therapy students come into the operating room. They actually watch a surgery. And then when they go out into therapy, they now understand why the patient is the way they are, right? So same idea, you know, everyone's got to see the other person's perspective.
Yeah.
In order to truly hit that end result, which is ultimately get the patient where they need to be.
Sure.
I completely agree. And I think, you know, when I was in medical school, they did a lot of this, which is, you know, they even had some of us like dress up and play the role of patients. So you feel what it's like, right? And I think that, you know, at least in certain companies, like when I was at Mazor, we did this, the idea of empathy is so important. And by empathy, it's not just on the patient side in terms of what they're going through and what it means to get a certain procedure so that they can walk again, but also things like going to the doctor's office and sitting with front desk for the whole morning and day and living the life to understand like what it's like to deal with that many patients, to see like, you know, like for me, even though my dad was a surgeon, I went to medical school, I didn't have an appreciation of what it's like to be an office manager until I worked at Mazor and I sat in the front desk and I was like, oh my God, on average, they're seeing 10, 15, 20 random salespeople come in a day, interrupting, bothering them. And I was like, if somebody did that with me, I would be in a bad mood every time I saw a salesperson too. And so I think the empathy side for a salesperson is so important because as a salesperson, you are the representation of the company. That's all the surgeon knows, along with their staff and, you know, in the clinic and the OR. And so the way you interact with them, the way you understand their workflow and the way you make sure to supplement and improve things rather than getting in the way, I think is so important.
Absolutely. And I think that's what this is all about. And it's why we're talking right now is for that empathy on both sides. You know, sales reps, if we want empathy from the customer, how hard we think our job is, we better be pretty careful of what we're posting online.
I totally agree. And, I totally agree.
And, you know, for the customer as well, you know, I love the idea that you sat with the front, you know, with the front office and got to see, you know, what it looks like through their eyes as reps come through. And I remember this was several years back. There was I don't know if either of you are familiar with Isham, like the kind of like the AORN for the sterile processing department. Mm. There was this program they did where vendors could get this certification if they did 32 observation hours in SPD through like decontam, clean sides, looked like there's a section for sterilizers. And I remember being part of that. Gosh, I couldn't even tell you how many years ago it was, but you really got that empathy to see reps come in, handing them a tray saying, I need this now. And like, okay, now I know that's impossible. Different staff members coming in, what requests they're making. And it helped give a complete, more complete operating picture of what we're doing and what how what we do affects what different departments of the hospital do. So I think empathy is the most critical word of this entire discussion today.
No, I completely agree. And I think, again, what I'm hoping to see more of, and you know, Dr. Dasa, this is how he and I got linked up, is that we share very much the same philosophies as to, you know, the we can call it, let's say, the business of medicine, how it should function. But I think that, you know, for, I see physicians, you know, surgeons especially, very much like great athletes, you know, because there's this whole idea of like, you know, having the right mindset, performing well each day, et cetera. And what I would really love to see, I love when salespeople and clinical reps, they do post like, hey, our surgeon hit, there are thousands of cases and everything. That's fine. But I would like to see some non-branded things, such as when a surgeon, you know, does something that's completely unrelated to your company, right? And finding ways to help, because a physician needs marketing as well. They want to get their name out there and everything. And I feel like a great rep would take their time to say, hey, you know, I'm going to try and help you with, let's say, your posts on LinkedIn or Doc Social or Twitter. I'll capture some great photos of you and everything. Doesn't have to be related to our company. I think that's going to be a really important thing. But Dr. Dasa, I'm wondering what your thoughts are on that.
I think you're dead on. Remember, it is so noisy out there, right? And I'm busy seeing a bunch of patients and I don't have much bandwidth, just like everybody else. You got family, you got kids, you got your work, you got this, you got that, you got so much going on. I'm trying to consume and stay up to date. Be a curator of information for me, right? So go out there. Now, granted, you know, you're not going to commission by sending me an email link, but you get what I'm saying, right? So curate the information. You know how I, if you've been working with me for a long time, you know how I think surgically. You know kind of what mm-hmm. my tendencies are and what my behaviors are. Oh, you know, Dr. Dasa, my company or somebody told me about this new thing or that new thing, or I saw this post that kind of fits with your philosophy or this art. I mean, help me sift through this so I can be better, right? And so then you start becoming my coach and my consultant as opposed to, you know, yeah, you did your first robotic case or whatever it is.
And you know, Dr. Dasa, you reminded me like something, it could be something very simple. Like I'll tell you, one of the best feelings I had when I was a rep was that I was, you know, this is again, it was robotic cases, right? There was one surgeon who I covered and another surgeon who I met just at a conference. You know, they used the same robotic platform. And I found a way to connect them first through email and then LinkedIn. And they were on two different sides of the country. And so they talked on the phone. And then when I was at the next conference the following year, they were like, they're seeing each other and catching up and everything. And I was like, oh, I'm really happy that you guys connected. And one of them said, oh, man, Omar, thank you so much for like connecting us, like Dr. So-and-so, this guy's like a brother from another mother, man. And so the fact that I was able to facilitate this friendship, not only that, you know, they became friends, but clinically and surgically, they shared the same philosophy and they now like collaborated and made each other better. Like, I think something even as simple as that is fine. And there's, oh, thank you. I love that some YouTube comments are rolling in. Alex Rincon has a comment. I want to bring it up and I want to comment on this and I want you guys to share your thoughts. So he said, as a sales professional, marketing team member, it is the job of the company to put yourself in your customer's shoes, understand their process, understand their needs, learn, grow, and adapt to provide a solution that fits their needs. Now, I don't know if this is what Alex originally meant, but I do want to comment on this. Yes, it's the job of the company. You don't wait for the company to roll out the training to do all these things. As a sales professional and as a marketing professional, key is professional. You own that education and growth, and you need to be a lot more proactive and say, well, I'm going to mention this to the company. We'll do a training, but I'm going to go and learn this on my own. That's my personal philosophy. Chad, I'm wondering if you agree.
I do. I think it's ultimately the responsibility of company representatives. And if, Alex, that's what you meant, I completely agree. I mean, think about your training as a rep in general, depending on what company you work for? Like, when did you go to training? Were you in the field for 6 months, 8 months, and then you go to training? Because I've seen that happen before. And at that point, your training was trial by fire. That was with that old phrase about drinking out of a fire hose. And that was on you, leveraging your teammates, your customers, to truly learn your role. And I think the same applies to finding solutions for our customers. And think about our discussion about the value that sales brings to the internal organization. We're the ones that are ultimately giving them the intel. And they're not going to be able to provide the solutions and the processes to best fit our customers' needs if they're not getting it from us and if we're not already taking it upon ourselves to do it.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And gentlemen, you know, I want to be mindful, especially of both your times. But, you know, as we wrap up, I want to do some closing thoughts. I want to give you guys both the floor just for your closing statements. But before we do, just to, man, I'll tell you, I'll get better about this broadcasting thing. But just to give a little shout out, we had some fantastic comments and people in. I just want to give a shout out and just call out some names. So some great comments. Timothy Thompson, wonderful engagement. Brianna Heitzman, Micah Weathers, thank you. Colton Rahab, wonderful comments. I didn't get to highlight some of Colton's stuff, but Colton made some really great points for the audience about sales awards are I'll bring this up, and it's a great quote, that sales awards are for resumes to show potential employers, investors, how much of an existing market you can capture. It's a rep's duty to serve the patient by helping providers and staff provide the best care possible. We shouldn't celebrate all of these people's injuries through sales awards. Totally agree. Michael Walker, Simon Evans, Garrett Bushinsky, man, this show is fantastic. We love our audience. We really appreciate it. Donna Claire has been on fire in the chat. We love you, Donna. We really appreciate it. Now, that being said, let me bring both of our speakers back. And while this was definitely marketed as the great debate, we really all share the, you know, similar philosophies about how we should do these things. So with that being said, Dr. Dasa, let me have you come on first and share just some closing thoughts and little, you know, advice for the salespeople who are listening, who, again, we're doing this live, but this will be going on demand recording across platforms, and we'll be publishing this on our podcasts.
Yeah, no problem. So I think everybody appreciates healthcare is changing, and it's changing a lot more quickly than it has, you know, previous 10 years. So I think the sales force out there needs to appreciate kind of how healthcare is changing, how physicians, hospitals, and others are being measured, and what their needs are in this changing paradigm, and exactly what value you're bringing in this new context. And so just showing up and thinking like it's 1980 is probably not a winning solution as we move forward.
Wonderful. Thank you, Dr. Dasa. Let me bring Chad on. Chad, you're up next. If I figure out this thing. There you are. All right, Chad, closing thoughts.
I first just want to start by thanking Dr. Dasa for being willing to come on and talk this out. It's very, very important subjects of discussion for both us and our customers. I think the two most critical takeaways, the two themes of this discussion, is one is empathy, is thinking about things through our customer's perspective. And we just got a great one today in this live stream. And the second is humility. And what I love about my following base is that humility is a big thing that most everyone seems to agree on. And that's what we need to remember when we're posting, is our sales numbers, that's about us, but our purpose is not. It's about everyone else. So as we're going forward and posting on LinkedIn and building that brand, just think about that. Think about why you're posting. Think about your customers. And are you really communicating, you know, value you're bringing to them, and highlighting what, you know, what they've done for you. So that's all I've got there. Sorry, cut out for a second, but appreciate everybody's engagement here. I think we all learned a lot today, and Omar, thanks for hosting us.
Absolutely, Chad. And thank you so much, Chad, Dr. Dasa. Thank you for spending some time out of your busy schedule to join us. If you can hang out in the back studio, I'm going to come chat with you guys in a minute. Thank you all for watching. Hey, look, this is a show that we're trying to build all, you know, every week. We love our audience. We appreciate it. if you are watching this and you want to know where you can watch it again, obviously it stays on LinkedIn. Much easier, you can find it on our YouTube channel, The State of MedTech. Go and subscribe to it. Turn your notifications on. And again, you know, send us some messages. You can DM me at Omar M. Khatib. And our speakers, again, let me bring up their handles. You can follow Dr. Dasa at Vinod Dasa MD on LinkedIn. Also check out Doc.social, which is a company that he's a founder of. It's a social media company and social network specifically for clinicians and the industry. And of course, our one and only correspondent from the field, Chad at the Mad Device Rep on Instagram and Twitter. Also, he is on LinkedIn right now. He's running amok. They have not kicked him off. We hope they don't. But as always, thank you so much for joining us. We love you guys. This has been a blast. We'll keep doing this. Send us some messages. We're always looking for new guests, new ideas. And for now, I'm your host and head of state, Omar M. Khatib for the State of MedTech. We'll see you all next time. Have a great weekend. See you later, everybody. Take care.
Thank you for listening to another episode of The State of MedTech. I'm your host, Omar M. Khatib. Do us a favor. If you like this episode, share with somebody and go ahead on Apple and Spotify, wherever you are, leave a 5-star review, type a few nice notes about us. This is how we get other people to find the show. Thank you, and we'll see you next time.